I have a couple books of war letters that have been published, and the idea that this was the only way you communicated, and this and that, and they might be censored way back when because they didn't want to give away any operational details. And now they just, now it's email and it's instantaneous, or, you know, we consider email the slow thing. And the idea that something that is that instant can be the old technology is so amazing when you think about it and think about the disconnect that the family members did not have in previous service times.
Well, and even what you said about like the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers, I mean, that's another thing. If the worst were to happen, it's something that, I mean, thankfully didn't happen to any of us, but you know, if something had happened to Matt, if he were injured or killed in, you know, one of his deployments, well, he was injured. I knew about it right away. You know, I mean, you know, within 24 hours. And I mean, even just now there have been, you know, we get reports every now and then about a soldier or a Marine or an airman or whatever from World War II that's just now been identified and brought home. And it's like, can you even imagine how that must be to have a husband that, or a son or a father that you send off to war and you just never hear from him again? You never know what happened to him. If he's was a prisoner of war, did he die, or, you know, what happened? I mean, that's gotta be agonizing. I mean, that's something we can't even fathom.
I think part of that, my husband's family actually really didn't go through that. His uncle served in Vietnam, but one of his mother's classmates is actually on the Vietnam Wall, and she wore for years a POW MIA bracelet for him because he was a pilot. It was assumed that the plane went down. They did not discover the plane wreckage until the early 90s. And he was just in, he went down in, I want to say 73. And they didn't discover the plane wreckage until the early 90s. They found the remains of his co-pilot. They still did not find his remains. But the assumption is that he was deceased, and whether or not his body was moved at that time or not, they will never know. His mother, this particular pilot's mother, lived to be 100, and they actually held a funeral service when she was 98 or 99, just so she would have the closure to say goodbye to this son. And it absolutely just, it was one of those moments. And my husband grew up in this tiny little town in the foothills of Mount Rainier. And it was just such a unifying moment where the whole town, because he was their hero. He was, that was their symbol of Vietnam, was this one person who was from their town and disappeared and was never seen or heard from again. And just the profoundness of that, even just walking through and taking people to the Vietnam Memorial and saying that is a name on the wall, that these names were all real people who had families. Some of them don't have any remains. And the idea of that is just so staggering in this day and age. So I think to kind of wrap this up, as we don't want to tax our listeners' time too much, how do you think military service going forward from 9/11 is going to continue to change? I mean, we've already talked about the technology and if the worst should occur, how we know about the worst almost instantaneously through media. You know, we hear about helicopters coming down or there was an attack and X number of soldiers were killed in this attack. When my brother was out on patrol during his first tour of duty, he called my mother and said, okay, first things first, everybody is okay. Second thing, the truck is not. And they had been on patrol and IED went off right under their truck, but they had just had the new reinforcement platings. That was when IEDs were the first, we were starting to hear the first of those waves of they're actually putting out IEDs, and they had just put reinforcement plates on his truck the week before, and it went off right underneath him. And the axle for the truck he was in ended up goodness knows how many feet away, just completely blown to pieces. But yet everybody walked away from that. But just hearing about that afterwards, it was like, you know, there's some things we just don't want to know how close your shaves were sometimes. But the fact that we can hear about them so quickly. So going forward from 9/11, do you think that we will still feel the same way about serving if boots end up being on the ground with the current issues and struggles with Islamic State, ISIS, in Iraq and Syria. How do you think military families will feel going forward if they're sent back? Cassie, why don't you go?
Well, there's a real disconnect between the American public and military families, at least from what I saw. Because again, for many of us, this is all we've known. I mean, my husband is no longer in the Marine Corps, but so I guess there's still, it was all we did know. We never had any kind of peacetime. So I think people have this expectation, you know, that our husbands tell us, oh, we're going on another deployment, and we're like wailing and gnashing our teeth, and, you know, it's so horrible. But it's just like, okay, you know, it's the expectation, you know, okay, well, this is the schedule. They go on a 9-month deployment, and then they're going to come home, and it's, you know, they'll be home for maybe a year if you're lucky, and then they'll go again. That's just how it is. And during that year that they're home, they're not really home all that much because they're going to be training. So it's just kind of the expectation for us. And I don't know about other branches, but in the Marine Corps, even if they're not going to, you know, Afghanistan on deployments, they go on MUs, Marine Expeditionary Units, which is they go on a Navy ship and go out to sea. So it's like pretty much no matter what happens, they're going to be gone. And it's just what you're used to. Whereas the American public, it was actually rather frustrating because you would hear about the war-weary public and it's like, you haven't sacrificed anything. What are you so tired about? You know, like, so, yeah. I mean, there's a real possibility, at least in my opinion, that I feel like we've forgotten 9/11. People have forgotten why we're doing this and what it is we were over there fighting for. And, you know, it's not even just about 9/11. That's the worst part is, you know, you find that out later. There are going on, what, 40 years of attacks now from, you know, radical Muslim jihadists. I mean, the military will adjust just fine.
Yeah.
You know, the military service members and their families, they'll be fine. It's, you know, the American public that's weak.
Yeah. Or war-weary, shall we say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Catherine, what do you think?
Well, I think there will always be conflict, whether it be World War II, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, and now Syria or wherever the heck else is going to happen. But I do know that military families have their own, like Cassie said, a whole different operating system. And we kind of gather the or circle the wagons when things happen and take care of our own. That I don't think will ever change, no matter how screwed up top brass may get. I think the people that are actually doing the military things will always stay pretty solid. And the families that I've met, and I'm sure Cassie, you can both speak to this, they're some of the finest people and most supportive people, not only to their own loved ones, but to one another as a whole. And I think, like Cassie said again, the American people could learn something from observing that, because that sort of exemplifies to me why we're doing what we do at Victory Girls, what anybody who's concerned about the direction the country's going. And the military will be just fine, like Cassie said. They'll be fine. I have no doubt when I know men like my son, that this country will be okay in that. But I do worry about the general public that politicalizes and trivializes all the sacrifices that have been made. So there's my little soapbox.
I think that's probably the biggest problem right now, is that the American public feels like this is now more of a political game. And so that we all sit and remember on 9/11 what occurred, but it's now disappeared out of the immediate consciousness until we're shocked into realizing something so horrific like a beheading. And yeah. I think that's the problem, is that right now we don't have a show of force going on. The military really doesn't even know they're at war or not. They basically are told to be on standby to a certain extent, just in case. But in the meantime, living just in case is not a great way to go about your day-to-day lives. Both my brother and my brother-in-law are in the Army, and I know that one of them is being told, prepare for a deployment. It may not happen, but go ahead and live your life like you're going to be deployed anyway. And it's just mind-boggling, because how are you supposed to make any kind of plans for the future if they're being you're being told, oh, yes, plan like you are not going to be there for the next 9 months to a year?
We call that Semper Gumby.
Yeah, that's a good – yeah, they don't have that term. They call that hurry up and wait in the Army. And when you're not actually deployed, you could be out on an FTX, field training exercise, but those are usually fairly short. Or you might get sent to go do extra training here, there. You may or may not take your family with you for certain ones. But yeah, we're watching a very interesting transition for those of us that are still watching active duty and have active duty family members, of them trying to behave like they're peacetime, but knowing there's still a war on. And that's probably the worst part, is for us living a reality of watching the news, seeing bad guys that are still quite active. They don't think the war's done. That's kind of the thing about war. It's not over until both sides say it's done. And so we may think it's over. We, the collective general American public, may think it's over, but the bad guys don't think it's over. And that's, they kind of get a say about how this continues to go on. And to have military and leadership going, we're in peace, but make sure you guys are ready to go at a moment's notice, is very frustrating. And I honestly don't know how this is going to continue to play out. Either of you know?
Oh, something will happen to push it. We just can't go rudderless like this without an agenda much longer, because like you said, the bad guys aren't waiting for us to make up our minds.
And the bad guys have now.
To me is like, it's not even so much the, I mean, Barack Obama has an agenda, you know, he has an agenda. We all know that. But it's like, I think the most frustrating thing to me and to a lot of, you know, military families is that our troops get sent over there and it's like they've got both their hands tied behind their back with these overly restrictive, you know, rules of engagement, and they can't really fight the war, you know?
Right.
I mean, this shouldn't even be a contest. We could destroy these people in a second, but we aren't allowed to because, you know, there's these insane rules of engagement. And then not only that, but it's, you always hear this idea of, if we're not going to let them go over there and fight and do it the right way, if we're not going to be 100% behind them, which the government's not, the Obama administration is not 100% behind the military. If you're not going to stand behind them 100% and support them in their task, then bring them back home. You can't do something like this halfway.
Nope. Evidently, some people think you can.
Part of it is how long is it going to take before people realize that the bad guys are still really bad? I mean, we get this wishy-washy, oh, how bad can they really be? You've got to be able to talk to them. And it's like, no, they just want you dead.
Yeah.
Try negotiating with somebody who just says, no, I want you dead. I mean, Israel's been trying that for how long now?
You know, well, I'm sure in about a year and a half it'll get better.
Yeah, really. Fingers crossed. So any closing thoughts from either of you? And then I can wrap this up.
No.
No, I just hope that the American public, when they stop and think about 9/11, they really remember what they felt that day. Instead of it just being a Patriot Day or a day that they stop and, oh, that was really bad. I realize in American lifetime, it seems like a long time, but it's really not that long. And nothing has changed in the enemy's goal set. They still want us. So my wish is for the American public to wake the hell up.
I would agree. I think if anything in our lifetimes, like a 9/11 blowout sale ever occurs, I might explode. Because that would just, I mean, in Memorial Day sales are bad enough. And the veterans,
you know, it's
veterans
coming.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's right about the time they have a Pearl Harbor sale. Well, that'll be.
People only remember Pearl Harbor now. If you were to ask the average person, I don't think that they would know what day Pearl Harbor was. And I think that very soon people, the same thing will happen with 9/11, even though, you know, the name of 9/11 kind of gives you the hint. I'm pretty sure that people, they're not going to remember. They barely remember now.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, I think it's disappearing out of the American consciousness. We get reminded of it once a year. We feel it once a year, and then it just kind of disappears. And for those of us who live with the consequences of 9/11, I mean, it hasn't disappeared for those who lost loved ones. It hasn't disappeared for those of us who have family members who were directly affected by serving in the military post 9/11. And I think that one thing Cassie said was very poignant, that the collective American public never sacrificed. And in World War II, that was a huge thing, that, you know, that we were conserving, we were sending, we were saving, buy war bonds, all of that. And even in Vietnam, it was a very collective feeling of, we are all suffering through this because of the draft. And it meant everybody. It didn't just mean those who were already in the military. It meant everybody. So the dynamic definitely has changed between military, military families, and the general public. And I'm afraid that if it continues to be that way, the gulf will simply get wider and it will be less respected. And we already see that kind of right now in politics, that the assumption that the your average soldier was somebody who couldn't make it in college, so they went to join the military, which couldn't be further from the truth. But there does seem to be that they know that they should be, when they're confronted with the individual soldier, they'll respect him, but as a whole, they like to disparage them.
Yeah.
So I think that I dread the next big event, and I desperately hope it's not on this day, but it does seem to be, because it's a meaningful day, and it does seem like now 9/11, any September 11th is fair game for a meaningful attack. If Benghazi taught us nothing else, it should have taught us that. I just am dreading that next big attack because I don't want one, but I don't know how to prevent. There is no way to prevent a single person with a suicide vest walking into your local mall. There just isn't. And that, I think, is my greatest fear, is that when a total war reaches America, mm-hmm. And that won't be one that we can easily send our military to go contain somewhere else. We have our opportunity to contain it now, and if we fail to do so, it will be here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I thank you ladies both for joining me for our inaugural podcast. And
thank you.
Will you do this again sometime?
Absolutely.
All right.
Sure. Great. We'll see. We love to talk.
Yes, we do. We do very well talking together. So, and yay for technology that has advanced and allowed us to create something like this. So hopefully as our listeners continue to hear us, they hear different voices from Victory Girls, but hopefully they'll also hear an improvement in sound and technology quality as we gain more experience doing this. So on behalf of myself, Cassie, and Catherine, thank you for listening to the Victory Girls podcast.